soar above with those who dare to look at the world from a new perspective and ask, what if? You're listening to The Altitude Podcast from Eagleview.
Hi, I'm Piers Dormeyer, CEO of Eagleview Technologies. On this show, we bring you stories of pioneers who are redefining the boundaries of their fields. Today, we're thrilled to welcome Emma Roloff, co-founder and principal consultant at Roloff Consulting. Emma brings a unique blend of teaching expertise and deep industry knowledge, helping business leaders drive successful digital transformations in rapidly changing environments. In our conversation, we'll dive into what it takes to lead effectively during times of volatility, the role of digital strategy in uncertain markets, and how leaders can stay resilient, focused, and people-centered when the pressure is on. Emma, welcome to the Altitude Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
All right, cool. Well, maybe we could just start off with you just telling some of our listeners a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into this business?
So I actually went to school to be a teacher. So my plan was to spend my days with middle schoolers talking about social studies. And I really loved that career option, but something kind of like deep inside of me when I was about ready to go graduate and move fully into teaching told me that I should try business before I committed to going into the classroom full time. I had had an opportunity while I was student teaching to do an internship and a corporate training role at the same time. And something kind of kept pulling me back to the business space. And so I, after graduation, moved into completely different than the insurance side of things, moved into a corporate training role for a fast food chain called Culver's for anybody that's in the Midwest or beyond where it is spread.
Butter burgers.
Exactly. Yep. I've taught a lot of people how to make butter burgers, scoop custard, you name it. And so right out of college, my job after being in the restaurant for all through high school and college was to help train brand new franchisees on every aspect of running a restaurant. So it was actually like a really incredible crash course into what business looks like and everything from making the food in the restaurant to HR practices, inventory, scheduling, you know, all of those types of things. And so I spent some time there and then kind of got to the point where after being in that space of hospitality and restaurant for over a decade and only being 24 years old, I was like, I got to figure out something different with my life here. I want to try some new things again. And at that point, I started looking for other training positions and I knew I wanted to go into technology. And I was looking for corporate training roles tied to technology. And I always joke that it actually came down to an intervention from my father-in-law, my husband, and his uncle on Thanksgiving, where they sat me down and they told me, instead of going into training, we really think you should go into sales. And not having come from a business background, like the idea of sales kind of made me want to throw up. And it took some convincing. But at the time, about 10 years ago now, my husband said something to me that's kind of the seed of what our business is now. And he said to me, you know, I know sales like doesn't sound great to you, but the best salespeople are teachers. And so if you can find a product that you care about and a company that you believe in, all you have to do is teach people how you're going to solve their problems and you don't have to sell anything. And so like any good wife, I decided to apply to one sales job to shut him up, fully intending not to get that job and not go down that path. And I ended up going and applying to a process consulting company that did large-scale transformations across a bunch of different industries. And again, the stars like must have aligned in some capacity for me because the COO of the company had worked for IBM. When IBM didn't have people to pull from with technology degrees in the early days, they would go hire salespeople from college campuses at recruiting events for teachers. And so she saw that I had the teaching background and thought, we can teach her about the technology and the sales side of things. She's got the skill sets that we need. And so to the surprise of everybody, I think, I ended up getting that job and joining that team and getting the bug for transformation. And then shortly after I joined them, my boss came in and said, hey, Emma, we know that there's a big opportunity for us to help companies in the property and casualty insurance space. we don't have anybody that's like an expert in that industry. Is that something you want to do? And at that point, I didn't really have much ground to stand on other than say, of course it is. And so a couple of years into my time with my previous employer, I started digging into insurance. And the more that I started to get into that role and meet more people in the industry and learn more about what was really happening, the more I kind of like combined those passions of transformation and insurance into kind of what my career has turned into today. After that decade in software sales, I decided to jump and join my husband and his consulting company. And so now the two of us focus on helping people all across the insurance industry and beyond really tap into how to use digital tools and their presence online to get in front of customers and teach them about how they can solve their problems.
Gosh, there's so much to unpack there. I think that the talk that you had, I had the talk as well, where I thought I was an engineer. And then next thing you know, I realized that I was really a salesperson. And I think I got told I was going into sales because if I didn't sell this thing, then there wouldn't be a job. And then after a little bit of tryouts, you realize that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And then after about a couple decades of being in business, you realize that at some point, everybody's in it anyway. So you might as well just come to that conclusion.
100%.
As soon as possible. Probably no more so than when you're running your own consulting business.
Yeah. So. Oh, I'm still in sales at this point. It just looks a little different.
Yeah, no, 100%. Can't avoid it. So your current work, I know that you're still very active in insurance. What other industries or verticals are you guys active in as well?
So I would say our biggest pockets, which is kind of the overlap with insurance, is just technology providers as a whole. So as I mentioned, in my first role, I sold cross-vertically, which I think we could certainly talk about is an interesting spot to be able to see the similarities and the differences between all different companies going through transformations. And I think we have a tendency in insurance to think that like we are very unique in the sense that there isn't overlap with other industries. And so I had the opportunity to kind of see that during that role. But going back to it, I also have built a following and done a lot of work just in kind of pure play technology as opposed to specifically insurtech companies. So we have a lot of folks that we work with that are in kind of the technology space, maybe not solely focused on insurance. And then another kind of unique opportunity that I found, which again has an overlap to insurance, is legal companies. So law firms or legal tech companies have a lot of that same overlap because there is so much kind of cross-pollination between the industries. So I would say those are our big three categories. Side by side on the technology side is a lot of consultants and folks that are working in that professional services capacity. So really where your expertise needs to be able to shine and you need to be able to demonstrate that authority that you have in a different way to get people to want to come and work for you as opposed to trying to chase people down. Because there's so much noise today that trying to chase people isn't as effective. We could make the argument maybe it wasn't all that effective in the beginning, but it, you know, we have different tools at our disposal to change the way that we do it now.
Yeah, agree. First thing comes to mind, I can go in a lot of different directions with you right now, especially around digital transformation right now with some of the current trends, you know, particularly as we're starting to look at Gen AI and now agentic. How are you thinking about applying, and I've seen a bunch of your stuff, it's great, on change management, particularly this people first approach. But when you're being approached, I'm sure all the time right now, with companies that are trying to implement an AI transformation strategy, how are you balancing, you know, that approach or frankly, just staying ahead of all of the rapid advancements and the new models and the new capabilities that are flooding the market?
So I think there's kind of like two things here, and I think they both start in the same place. So when it comes to taking a people-centric view of any sort of technology implementation, my viewpoint, surprise, surprise, based off of my introduction, is that education, or what I call digital literacy, needs to be the foundation of any sort of program that you're rolling out within your company. Because when we look at things like artificial intelligence or, you know, intelligent automation, which was the version before we got here, or just workflow and any sort of automation to begin with, when you look at resistance, that resistance always typically comes back to a handful of problems. Confusion, fear. And those ideas are typically really tangled up with the idea that people don't know what to expect moving forward. And the only way to get them to know what to expect is to educate them on the technology that you're bringing in, how things are going to change, what you envision the future looking like, and spending that time helping them build the skill sets that they need not to fear these things, sharing a vision with them so that they don't feel like they're staring into darkness without any idea of what's coming towards them, sharing information with them so that they don't feel like you're withholding things and hiding things because there is something to fear. And so I think that like foundational building block is going to be education and giving people access to resources that they can learn more about what's coming, learn about the different components of artificial intelligence, give them the language to be able to ask the questions that they want to ask and really get their arms wrapped around things that are happening. Then from there, once they have that base and that knowledge of what's going on and what is the art of the possible, then it's giving them a place to experiment with things and look at where other companies are using it or learn about use cases of how they could potentially like bring it into the company. And I think, especially when we get to really large organizations, what tends to happen is whether it's AI or a different type of technology, it comes as a directive down as opposed to something that the company is working together to do. And when that directive comes down, and especially if it's not a fully strong vision, I guess is the best way to put that, people start to fill in the blanks for themselves. And that's where the skepticism and the resistance and the fear and the confusion start to come. But like if you take the time to bring your team along with you, educate them, and then bring them into how and where it fits into your company, then it's something that they might still be, you know, feeling out or working through, but at least it's not as spooky as it is if it's like this monster hiding in the darkness.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I remember I read a post that was made by, it was a company directive email from Shopify's CEO. I don't know if you caught this, but the essence is that we're expecting everyone to deploy as many productivity enhancing AI tools into the workflow as possible. And I'm a big fan of the thinking here. One of the key messages here was we're not hiring anybody that an AI agent couldn't do. Meaning, and frankly, if you want to hire the role, you got to show me that it can't be done without implementing a tool like that. So I think it was positive, but it was pretty aggressive because I don't think I've seen anybody come straight out and say, hey, you know what? Your head counts, they're all on hold until you show me that we can't do this another way. In your experience, who have you, and when I say who, I mean maybe a company has done this really well?
So, and this is where I have a hard time because like the stories that you're going to hear are always going to be, and I've heard the Shopify one, Salesforce's CEO really put his foot in his mouth in January and came out and said they're not hiring any more engineers because of the productivity increases that they've gotten from their own AI as they had open engineering positions on the website and continued to moving forward. There's just this last week, Duolingo's CEO came out and said that they're an AI first company, and that means replacing contractors with AI anywhere that they can. And the critical issue with that statement and the messaging that every one of those CEOs came out with was that the argument that we're trying to make to people not to fear AI is that AI is not going to replace you. But in their vision that they're painting for their company moving forward, they're explicitly saying that AI is going to replace people. So if I work for them and I see that message, I have no belief that my job is not going to be replaced the second that the technology can do the tasks that I do as a human. Now, where I think we have an opportunity to rethink this is, you know, in that Shopify example, maybe it's coming out with a statement saying, we want you to implement agentic AI anywhere that you're going to be able to remove manual tasks so that your team can focus on the human aspects of their job. We're going to have, you know, this series of education that helps educate you on exactly these productivity components that you have at your disposal that you can start leveraging or here's the process to get on the waiting list to be able to implement these types of solutions. And as we do that, we're going to be changing our job descriptions to focus more on the actual, like, uniquely human components of our employees so that we know we're making the most of everybody's skill sets moving forward.
That's great. Well said. You know, for our take, this is one of those kind of policies that's kind of difficult to thread. It's kind of difficult to come up with exactly the right words. All of our jobs, by the way, to everyone out there, are live, are real. We want to put as many tools in hand so that we can just go even faster.
The thing that I say all the time is that, like, AI isn't going to steal your job, but it's going to change it. And if you think that you are not going to be doing very different tasks day in and day out 5 years from now than you are today, then you're fooling yourself. So you need to stay up to date on skills and understanding how this technology works as an individual. You can't just rely on your company to do that for you either. But there will still be areas of productivity for humans to contribute to. There will be bigger problems to solve. There's plenty of things that we have not figured out in the world yet. We still have plenty of capacity for human productivity, but we're just going to be doing it differently now.
We've reached a new cruising altitude here at this point in the discussion, and I'd like to take a moment to tell you, our listeners, about a very exciting new capability we recently launched at EagleView. EagleView One is our new premium digital user experience. It offers a unified access point to the full power of EagleView's unrivaled 3D visualizations, imagery, and analytics, and puts powerful AI, precise 3D models, and all the tools and data that EagleView offers all in one easy-to-use, modern platform to help make your projects smoother, faster, and more efficient. Built to scale into the future with your business needs in mind, EagleView One will be continually updated to bring you new technologies and to further enhance the ability to integrate EagleView's extensive and powerful asset intelligence into your existing workflows. To learn more about the transformational experience EagleView One offers, visit eagleviewone.com. That's eagleviewone.com. Well, going in a little bit of a different direction, obviously lots of volatility outside of technology changing, but just the economic uncertainty out there has been crazy, particularly in our government markets, the federal markets, all of that, just wild what's going on over there. But in a digital transformation, even digital strategy development context, how do you advise these leaders to kind of stay the course despite not knowing exactly what the future is going to look like?
It's never done anybody favors to stand still. And that being said, there is a lot happening right now that's creating uncertainty. And that uncertainty obviously is making people more hesitant to make moves than ever before. But being able to move forward doesn't always have to cost millions of dollars. And I think we oftentimes trick ourselves into thinking that if we want to be better than we were before, that means buying a tool or a widget. And sometimes that means leaning into the tools that we have available, leaning into the partnerships that are there, looking for opportunities to think differently. And maybe it's process improvements. Maybe it's a smaller software investment and relooking at the way that you solve the problem. Or again, leaning into existing partnerships that you have to see where they're bringing in AI and where there are opportunities for you to expand as opposed to replace or bring in these new platforms to completely augment what you're doing. But the most important thing is for you to never become like complacent and sit and wait, because sitting and waiting doesn't do you any favors. It just puts you 10 steps behind whoever was there as opposed to five that maybe was putting in tons and tons of money to begin with. And I think we often forget about the things that we can do with existing tools, existing partnerships, and rethinking the way that we're doing it in present time. The amount of times that, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, when you start talking to somebody about why they do things the way that they do, that the decisions that were made and the processes that were created that have now become gospel were created based off of technology limitations in the past and were just carried forward into new platforms because that's the way we do it and that's our process. There are chances are there are opportunities for you to relook at a process with a fresh set of eyes and change it and make it more productive without ever doing anything other than the process improvement side of it. But then in that capacity, look at where you can bring in a rolled out phase for like new technology. So maybe you can't pull the trigger on a huge purchase, but you can start with a pilot and start moving forward and test out the return on investment with things so that when you're making the decision to move forward, it is in fact like something that's going to deliver an ROI. But I think the most important thing is not to like trick yourself into thinking that like playing it completely safe and stopping your progress and doing business as usual is going to get you ahead, because it's not.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I would just ask, when you're working various companies, various clients, what would you say is a kind of common pitfall to avoid?
Oh, I mean, my most probably stereotypical one is going to be like transparency and communication. And I say this more from the standpoint of less directly working with clients, because people are sometimes going to be afraid to say this to you out loud, and more from content that I've created and the feedback that I've gotten through platforms like TikTok. I made one, and that like I had an aha moment. I made one video and it was like a meme. It was, you know, it took me 5 minutes to make, about like joking around about getting a week's notice that a new platform was coming in. And I kind of was like being a little like tongue in cheek, like, you know, it's never this bad. They're going to give you more than a week's notice. And I put it out there. The video went viral. The video had thousands of comments, and most pervasively was like, wait, you guys got a week? Or like, try a day, or try finding out the day the solution went live. And that was my moment where I realized like, okay, I knew that this was a problem. I didn't realize how like ridiculous of a problem it actually was. And then I started to, again, like after that video went viral, I've had a couple of others that have, and then just like this kind of like corner of the community, or like corner of the internet that I've created. Now I'll get messages from companies where people will be like, this is where I work. Please don't ever speak about it publicly. Like big publicly traded companies that are well known for being technologically advanced, and they'll lay out what's going on the table. And I'm like, whew, okay, yeah, that this is an issue. And it all kind of stems back to this idea of like, how are we communicating? And like almost going back to the golden rule of, how would you want to be treated if your entire like work life was going to shift overnight? Would that be acceptable to you? Or would you think that that was outrageous that somebody gave you a brand new platform with no training and told you to go? And so kind of thinking about like, how would you want to be treated in that situation where your entire world changes? Well, you'd want to be able to give feedback even if everything wasn't taken. You'd want to understand what was changing and when. You'd want to know what the expectation was. You'd want, you know, a little bit of grace period to get used to the new systems before your KPIs need to be back up to where they've always been. And these like very basic things that we would all want if we were in that scenario are non-existent, especially in these larger companies where it's that directive and there's lack of communication or any sort of foresight into what it's going to mean for the employees.
We use this phrase, hard on processes, easy on people. We always used to talk about disruptive technology. And I kind of banished the use of that word years ago in sales, because people don't want to hear anything disruptive. Disruptive's not great. Transformative's awesome. Like game changing, going to save you a bunch of money, easy. Implementation, sure. Disruptive, just banish it, because that's the last thing people need. You're not factoring all of that into their days. So talk to me about the Catalyst community.
As I mentioned, I have a decade in sales, and my husband also in tech sales and running a sales and marketing team for a web development company for about that same period of time. And after we both were in sales, he had convinced me to move to the dark side. We're both operating in that capacity. COVID hit and everything changed for both of us and everybody else in the world, obviously. But it was about that turning point, like where we kind of realized it wasn't the 2 weeks or the, you know, 14 days to slow the spread or whatever it was, that like we were going to be living in this world for a while. And at that point, I had always been education heavy, on site with clients whenever I could, doing lunch and learns, running webinars, writing blog posts, doing all the things that were kind of like digital marketing/sales at the time. But even those tools became not as effective because everyone had a webinar out there talking about their COVID response or was trying to dial up the cold calling volume to just get a hold of somebody. I was getting voicemail boxes that were full because people hadn't forwarded their phones. And he and I were admittedly just having a discussion where at that point I had worked myself up to having the biggest quota in the company. And I looked at him and I was like, how do I do this? Like, what am I supposed to do? Because that number doesn't go away. And, you know, if you're a salesperson, usually a small percentage of your money comes from your base pay. So, you know, it was like, if we want to continue the life that we've got, if we want to do these things, like I've got to figure out how I'm going to get back out there and close enough deals to fulfill this quota. And going back to, you know, I always joke that he's like the Mr. Miyagi to my, like the kid washing the car. I'm not actually a Karate Kid fan,
but Daniel.
There we go. And he said to me, he was like, well, why don't you try video? And I think a lot of people now who see me 5 years in would like never believe that it was something that I was like nervous about or didn't feel comfortable with because I've made an ass of myself on the internet enough times now. But it was a very uncomfortable idea for me to put myself out there and specifically to put myself out there as an expert online. That was something, again, having come in from outside the industry without a technology background, I felt really uncomfortable positioning myself that way. And I was like, and then beyond that, does anybody want to watch like video on digital transformation? Like, is that a thing? Is there an audience for that? And he kind of like issued the challenge of like, what's the worst that happens? Like no one watches it. Then you stop doing it. And so I made one video and I always joke, I like used my baby as a prop. And we were sitting there having a conversation. She wasn't. She was a baby. But I was having a conversation with people on the other end about how they could learn more about transformation. And I got some views on it. There wasn't much interaction. And then I decided to kind of continue to lean into that. And over time, it grew. It became an incredibly wonderful tool for me for getting exposure. But over time, the things that really surprised me where I got better at my job because I was all of a sudden, instead of waiting for game time, when you're out there in front of a client trying to explain an idea or get them to like believe that you and your team are the right fit, I was practicing that message every single day. I was challenging my beliefs by commenting on other people's stuff. I was learning things from other people that I wasn't exposed to before, all because I decided to invest in LinkedIn as a platform for me to find opportunities as a salesperson. And James was doing much of the same, even a little bit before me, in terms of like in-person events and using kind of this like educator mindset and as a sales tactic as well. And both of us realized like we like our jobs better. We're better at it when we're doing it this way. And then we find the right customers. So the right people that want to come and work with me and aren't going to make fun of me when I make up words during our conversations or don't know who is actually in the movie with Mr. Miyagi. But all of these things about myself that are inherently a part of a working relationship with me were now on display. So the right types of people that were going to enjoy working with me and trust my advisement and be the right partners moving forward were the ones that reached out and wanted to work together. And he had the same experience. And so when I joined him in the community, when I joined him in the company, we started talking about this idea of launching a community to help other people outside of just who we were advising hands-on with like our consulting work, but to help more people get their arms wrapped around digital strategy and how to get out there, build authority, expand their reach, and ultimately generate more revenue. And so took us a little while to kind of come together with what the pieces were for that. But now we were about a little over a year into running the Catalyst community. And it's a group of people that are all focused on doing sales and business leadership in a different way. And using the tools that are at our disposal to, again, take that mindset of an educator and become their customers' and prospects' favorite teacher on whatever area is their expertise. And so we really focus on creating educational content and using that as a way to really teach before you ever ask for business so that, again, the right people come to you to want to work with you moving forward.
Makes a ton of sense. It's your cheat code. So we could go on for a while. I would love to start asking you crazy questions like what's the biggest TikTok fail video you've ever had and all this, but
probably the first one.
Yeah. I want to leave you with the last word. So how can people learn more about Roloff Consulting and what it is that you guys do?
Yeah, well, really creatively, our website, roloffconsulting.com. And again, our last name is Roloff, so hopefully it's not hard for people to find. But you can certainly find both of us on LinkedIn as well. We're both really active there. You can shoot me a direct message or come to our website. We've got a contact form. And even if people just have quick questions and they want somebody to bounce an idea off of, I'm always available and happy to help how I can.
Well, appreciate the conversation. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for this episode of the Altitude Podcast from Eagle View. Again, I want to extend a huge thank you to Emma Roloff for her fantastic insights on effective leadership, especially during uncertain times. And thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe, give us a follow, and tell your friends to listen. I'm Piers Dormeyer. See you next time on the Altitude Podcast.